The last couple of weeks, we talked about how God spent 80 years preparing Moses for the work that he had for him to do. He spent the first 40 years in putting Moses in Pharaoh's household and let him see how the greatest government of the world at the time, the greatest nation of the world at the time, how it was run. He received the best education that the world could offer at the time by being a member of Pharaoh's household. He saw the daily goings on of running a nation and leading a nation and learned how to lead people through that. The next 40 years he spent with the priest of Midian, the high priest of Midian, and in fact married into his family, worked for him for 40 years as a shepherd, and through that learned who God was, learned who Yahweh was, learned what it meant to be a person of God, learned what it meant to lead people of God, to lead God's people. And so those 40 years and 40 years combined provided an invaluable background and training that that prepared Moses unlike any other person has ever been prepared to do God's work. So we then saw last week that then at the end of that 80 years, God came to Moses in the burning bush and said, okay, it's time, I'm calling you to go and rescue my people. The time is full and my plan is ready for you to go do this. And we saw that Moses was a reluctant servant, a reluctant leader. He gave five excuses why he was the wrong man for the job. And every one of those excuses we found were very similar to the kind of excuses that we offer to God when we run into opportunities to share our faith and we don't. When we run into opportunities to fulfill the calling that God's prepared us for and we don't. We make up excuses why we can't do it or why we couldn't do it or whatever. And the excuses that Moses had were very similar to the excuses that we come up with. And what we saw is that the answers that God gave to those excuses or the responses he gave are the same sort of responses he gives to us. And shows us the folly of those excuses and shows us that God has prepared us to do his work, and just as he had prepared Moses to do his work. So what was that work that God had called Moses to do? If we look back at chapter 3, verses 9 and 10, we can remember that. This is God speaking to Moses from the burning bush. He says, "So I've come down to rescue them from the hand of the Egyptians and bring them up out of that land into a good and spacious land, a land flowing with milk and honey, the home of the Canaanites, Hittites, Amorites, Perizzites, Hivites, and Jebusites. And now the cry of the Israelites has reached me, and I've seen the way the Egyptians are oppressing them. So now go. I am sending you to Pharaoh to bring my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt." Okay, so Moses was being called to go rescue his people from the Egyptians and bring them to the promised land, the land that God had promised so many years before, even way back to Abraham. And God said, go. That's the word he gives us too, is go. That's his instruction. And he was to go and to talk to Pharaoh and bring his people out of Egypt. Okay. One of the excuses that Moses gave had to do with, well, what if, you know, not just Pharaoh, speaking to Pharaoh, but what if the Israelite leaders don't believe me, don't believe that you sent me, don't believe my story that I'm here to rescue them? They've got to be on my side. What if that doesn't happen? So God said they will believe. And did they? Well, chapter 4, 29 to 31. Moses and Aaron brought together all the elders of the Israelites, and Aaron told them everything that Yahweh had said to Moses. He also performed the signs before the people, and they believed. And when they heard that Yahweh was concerned about them and had seen their misery, they bowed down and worshipped. They had had so many years of wondering, if does God really care? Does God know we're here? Does God know what's happening to us? Why is this happening to us? All this slavery and harsh treatment. Has God forgotten about us? And then they hear that God has not forgotten about them. God's ready to rescue them. God sends Aaron and Moses. So they agree. They believe and they get behind him. Okay? So, that was his first step, is to go to the Israelite leaders and to tell them that God had sent him to save them. Now, his next step was to go to Pharaoh and to ask for Well, ask for what? What was it that Moses told Pharaoh? Chapter 5, verse 1. Afterward, Moses and Aaron went to Pharaoh and said, "This is what Yahweh, the God of Israel, says. Let my people go, so that they may hold a festival to me in the desert." Okay? So, he said, Yahweh has sent me, the Lord. Okay, is how we see it in our Bibles here, but the word there is Yahweh. The God of Israel has sent us. And we saw last week that Yahweh is Hebrew for I am, or He is, or He shall be. Okay? So, Yahweh has sent us, and we have come to ask for your permission for us to go out into the desert and to worship our God for a few days. So how does Pharaoh respond to this request? Pharaoh said, "Who is Yahweh? And I should obey Him and let Israel go? I don't know Yahweh, and I will not let Israel go." Okay, so you see, he just rejects it. I don't know who Yahweh is. Okay, going on, verse 3, then they said, "The God of the Hebrews has met with us. Now, let us take a three-day journey into the desert to offer sacrifices to Yahweh our God, or He may strike us with plagues or with a sword." Okay? God's commanded us. Yahweh is our God. That's who Yahweh is. And He's commanded us to come out into the desert and worship Him. And if you don't let us go, I don't know what's going to happen. He may strike us with plagues. He may strike us with a sword. Let us go. Well, Pharaoh's response, but the king of Egypt said, "Moses and Aaron, why are you taking the people away from their labor? Get back to work." Then Pharaoh said, "Look, the people of the land are now numerous, and you are stopping them from working." Okay? So Pharaoh was concerned. He had this great labor force, tons of slaves doing all this work. Pharaoh had lots of construction projects going on, and it was all slave-driven, very inexpensive. Okay, you think construction is inexpensive here in Houston. In Goshen and in Egypt, it was very, very inexpensive because all they had to do is feed the slaves, and they were taken care of. Okay, now Pharaoh has this bold request of Moses and Aaron. Now, whether this Pharaoh happened to have been the true son of the Pharaoh and have known Moses, like we see in the movie The Ten Commandments with Yul Brynner, we don't know. It never indicates that. But nonetheless, Pharaoh is Pharaoh. Pharaoh is the ruler in charge. He's got all the power. And this person, Moses, two of them, and Aaron come and make this request. He's got to show that he's in control, and it doesn't make any sense to him. So how does he show that he's the one in control here? Okay, verse 6. That same day, Pharaoh gave this order to the slave drivers and the foreman in charge of the people. "You are no longer to supply the people with straw for making bricks. Let them go and gather their own straw, but require them to make the same number of bricks as before. Don't reduce the quota. They're lazy. That's why they're crying out, 'Let us go and sacrifice to our God.' Make the work harder for the men so that they'll keep working and pay no attention to lies." Okay? These people have too much time on their hands. They're talking and coming up with these crazy ideas. They're too lazy. We need to get them back to work. So let's put more work on them. They keep their same quota, but they have to go gather their own straw. They have to get their own straw for making the bricks. Okay, let's make them too busy to even think about ideas like this. Okay, what effect did this have on the Israelites? Verses 19 to 21. Obviously, we're covering 11 chapters today, so we're going to zoom through and not read all the verses. I'd recommend to you that you take some time and read these. There's a lot of interesting things that we're passing by just because we don't have the time to cover it all this morning. Okay. So what effect did this have on the Israelites? Verse 19, the Israelite foremen realized they were in trouble when they were told, "You are not to reduce the number of bricks required of you for each day." When they left Pharaoh, they found Moses and Aaron waiting to meet them. And they said, "May Yahweh look upon you and judge you. You've made us a stench to Pharaoh and his officials and have put a sword in their hand to kill us. things were so much better before you showed up and created all this problem. Now we're in all this trouble. Okay? How did Moses feel about that? Verse 22, Moses returned to Yahweh and said, "O Lord, why have you brought trouble upon this people? Is this why you sent me? Ever since I went to Pharaoh to speak in your name, he's brought trouble upon this people. And you haven't rescued your people at all. It's been a whole day, God. What's the deal? What are you waiting on?" Okay, you see his impatience here. We're going to see it takes a few months as we go through these plagues for all of this to before Pharaoh finally agrees. Okay, and you know, you haven't done it yet. What's the deal? Why are you taking so long? Well, why was God waiting to rescue his people? Chapter 6. Then Yahweh said to Moses, "Now you will see what I will do to Pharaoh. Because of my mighty hand, he will let them go. Because of my mighty hand, he will drive them out of the country." In verses 6 and 7, "Therefore, say to the Israelites, I am Yahweh, and I will bring you out from under the yoke of the Egyptians. I will free you from being slaves to them, and I will redeem you with an outstretched arm and with mighty acts of judgment. I will take you as my own people, and I will be your God. Then you will know that I am Yahweh your God, who brought you out from under the yoke of the Egyptians." Okay? So why was God waiting? Because he wanted to reveal himself. And through what's about to happen over the next few months, God's going to reveal himself to the Israelites. Because all they've known for the last 400 and something years is, well, they've worshipped Yahweh, but they sure see a lot of this Egyptian God stuff all around them. Okay? We haven't seen God intervene since the times of the patriarchs, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. So God's going to reveal himself to the Israelites through some mighty deeds, some mighty powers, that there's no way these things could happen other than by God. But he's also going to show himself to the world. He's going to show himself to Pharaoh. He's going to show himself to all of Egypt, the Egyptians. He's going to reveal himself and show his mighty hand. And not only that, but not only will Pharaoh then let his people go, let God's people go. And you see what the request was before, is let them go to worship him out in the desert for a few days to worship God. Okay? Well, it says that Pharaoh is going to drive the people out. Okay, and for good. So, did this explanation regain the confidence of the Israelites? Verse 9. Moses reported this to the Israelites, but they didn't listen to him because of their discouragement and cruel bondage. Okay, they were suffering, they were in pain, and all they know is that things were bad, then Moses came along, and things got worse. And they didn't want to listen to him any longer. So how did this affect Moses and his confidence? Then Yahweh said to Moses, "Go tell Pharaoh, king of Egypt, to let the Israelites go out of this country." But Moses said to Yahweh, "If the Israelites won't listen to me, why would Pharaoh listen to me, since I speak with faltering lips?" Okay, there's that excuse he gave, we saw last week, that he's not very good at speaking, but we've seen that he was trained very well during his first 40 years in Pharaoh's household, and being a great speaker. Okay. But you see his confidence is shattered, which is good, because if he thought that he could do this, then he wouldn't be able to do it, because it would be him doing it. And what's going to happen here is not Moses' mighty acts and mighty deeds, it's God's mighty acts and mighty deeds. We're revealing God here, not Moses here. So it's good that Moses was overwhelmed, because what needs to happen here is only by the power of God. So, how did God remind Moses, or who did God remind Moses was in control here? We zoom on to chapter 7. Now, you can read those next words if you'd like. They're real exciting about all the clans of and the tribes and all. But chapter 7. Then Yahweh said to Moses, "See, I've made you like God to Pharaoh, and your brother Aaron will be your prophet. You're to say everything I command you, and your brother Aaron is to tell Pharaoh to let the Israelites go out of his country. But I will harden Pharaoh's heart. And though I multiply my miraculous signs and wonders in Egypt, he will not listen to you. Then I will lay my hand on Egypt, and with mighty acts of judgment, I will bring out my divisions, my people, the Israelites. And the Egyptians will know that I am Yahweh when I stretch out my hand against Egypt and bring the Israelites out of it. Okay? So God tells Moses what he's going to do. This rejection that he's afraid that Pharaoh's going to reject him. Guess what, Moses? He is. He's going to do it over and over and over again. But you know what? It's part of God's plan. It's part of God's plan to allow God to reveal himself and his power to the Israelites, to the Egyptians, to show that he is in control, and have Pharaoh then decide to send the people out. All right? How old was Moses at the time? And by the way, how old was Aaron? Going on. Moses and Aaron did just as the Lord, as Yahweh commanded them. Moses was 80 years old and Aaron 83 when they spoke to Pharaoh. So that's how we know that Aaron was 3 years older than Moses. So he was 3 years old when Moses was put into the basket in the Nile. So here we see again that Moses was 80. So he came right away after the burning bush. All right, so Moses goes to Pharaoh, and Moses needs Pharaoh to realize that this is God speaking, not Moses speaking, that Moses is just bringing the word of God. What sign does God give Moses to show Pharaoh? Okay, going on, verse 8. Yahweh said to Moses and Aaron, when Pharaoh says to you, perform a miracle, well then say to Aaron, take your staff and throw it down before Pharaoh, and it'll become a snake. Okay, so that trick that verse 10. So Moses and Aaron went to Pharaoh and did just as Yahweh commanded. Aaron threw his staff down in front of Pharaoh and his officials, and it became a snake. So that's the same trick that God showed Moses early on at the burning bush when Moses said, what if they don't believe me? And God gave him three signs to show. Throw down your stick, it'll turn into a snake. Pick it back up, and it'll turn back into a stick. Okay. The second sign had to do with putting his hand in his shirt and pulling it out, and it was leprous, and putting his hand in, pulling it out, and the leprosy would be gone. And then the third sign was taking some water from the Nile and pouring it on dry ground, and that water would turn to blood. Okay, so we see that the sign here that he shows Pharaoh is the very first sign that God had given him. So how does Pharaoh respond to this sign? Pharaoh then summoned wise men and sorcerers, and the Egyptian magicians also did the same things by their secret arts. Each one threw down his staff, and it became a snake. But Aaron's staff swallowed up their staffs. Yet Pharaoh's heart became hard, and he would not listen to them, just as Yahweh had said. Now, there have been snakes that can be trained to be stiff and act like a stick, so that and people who can do this trick, you know, they train these snakes, and the snake looks like a stick, and then they can set it down, and it acts like a snake again, and they pick it back up a certain way, and it acts like a stick again. So the magicians did the same thing, but what you see is the power of God being even stronger, where Aaron's staff swallowed up Pharaoh's staff. Later on, we're going to see Aaron's staff buds, and so it really is a staff. It's not really a snake acting like a stick. Instead, it's a stick acting like a snake. But you see through this, Pharaoh's heart was hard, and Pharaoh did not believe, and Pharaoh rejected that sign. Well, so Pharaoh has seen magic. He's got magicians to do magic, and so whenever he sees some magic, he has his magicians do it, and he sees, oh, that's just a magic trick. So he didn't care about this snake stick thing because, oh, that's just a magic trick. I've got magicians who can do that too. Were there any other of God's miracles or God's wonders that the magicians were able to duplicate? Well, there were a couple of them. Actually, the first couple of plagues. Chapter 7, verse 22. And this is the water into blood trick, the third thing that God showed Moses at the burning bush. And Moses did that, and Verse 22, the Egyptian magicians did the same things by their secret arts. And Pharaoh's heart became hard. He would not listen to Moses and Aaron, just as Yahweh had said. And the second plague was the plague of frogs. And verse 7, chapter 8, the magicians did the same things by their secret arts. They also made frogs come up on the land of Egypt. So we see the first two plagues, the magicians could do too. So Pharaoh didn't think much of those plagues because it's just some little magic trick that my guys can do as well. What about plague 3? Chapter 8, verse 18. When the magicians tried to produce gnats, gnats was the third plague, by their secret arts, they could not. No matter how they tried, they couldn't do it. And the gnats were on men and animals. So what did they think about it? The magician said to Pharaoh, "This is the finger of God." So you'd think Pharaoh would get it, but instead his heart was hard and he would not listen, just as Yahweh had said. So we get the same phrase there. So he obviously thought, well, even though these magicians can't do it, and they're saying this is the finger of God, they're just not smart enough. This Moses and Aaron guy have obviously, they're pretty sharp magicians, but I'm not going to let their people go. Okay. Where did these magicians get their power? Well, 2 Thessalonians comments on that. Chapter 2, verse 9. Says, the coming of the lawless one will be in accordance with the work of Satan, displayed in all kinds of counterfeit miracles, signs, and wonders. So, does Satan have powers? Yes. Can Satan perform miracles? Yes. Okay. So we need to have discernment when we see miracles. Is it evil? Is it of God? But here we see these magicians, they were given power by Satan. So God was in battle with Satan at this time too. Now, talking about these magicians and their relationship to these plagues, they copied plague 1 and 2. They could do that. They were not able to do plague 3. There's another time we see the magicians in the plagues, and that's in plague number 6. This is the plague of boils. Chapter 9, verse 11. The magicians could not stand before Moses because of the boils that were on them and on all the Egyptians. Okay, so they even succumbed to the magic, if you want to call it that. If Pharaoh wants to call it that, but to God's power through this plague of the boils. Okay, so they had already figured out in plague 3 that this was the hand of God, but now they're being impacted as well. They cannot combat it. All right, so we see Pharaoh's magicians can't stand up against Moses and Aaron's magic because their magic is not magic. Their magic is the hand of God. Right, so let's look at the plagues. There are 10 plagues, and what's interesting is you walk through them, they kind of feed on each other. And you can come up with, and if you watch some of the documentaries on TV, you'll see all sorts of explanations of natural causes, or not natural causes, but how what these things might actually be, what might have happened, and how nature could be involved. Should we dismiss those things? I don't see a conflict here myself, because who created nature? God did. When God wants to reach out to his people, what does he usually do? He usually uses other people. God can use his own creation to his own means. So I see God doing that a lot in these plagues. I have a hard time understanding how these things could happen without God having them happen, God making them happen. But I have no problem with God using nature and having natural things happen, because God made them happen through these. Okay? That'll become clear as we kind of walk through here. But God can use creation to do his will, and we'll see that here. Alright, the first plague. Okay, chapter 7, verses 19 through 21. Yahweh said to Moses, tell Aaron, take your staff and stretch out your hand over the waters of Egypt, over the streams and canals, over the ponds and all the reservoirs, and they will turn to blood. Blood will be everywhere in Egypt, even in the wooden buckets and stone jars. In other words, the water that's sitting, so it's not just the Nile there, but water that's sitting in buckets and jars. Stone jars are things that, by the way, stone jars, when the Israelites later on, when they go through their cleansing rituals, the water that they would use would have to come out of stone jars, or it would have to be flowing water. It couldn't be stagnant water sitting in like a clay vessel or a wooden vessel, because that can harbor disease, that can harbor problems, but stone cannot. And so here, even stone jars would turn to blood, it says here. Okay, going on, verse 20. Moses and Aaron did just as Yahweh had commanded. He raised his staff in the presence of Pharaoh and his officials and struck the water of the Nile, and all the water was changed into blood. The fish in the Nile died, and the river smelled so bad that the Egyptians could not drink its water. Blood was everywhere in Egypt. Okay? So the first plague was that third trick, turning water into blood. But this wasn't just taking a cup of water and pouring it on the ground, having it become blood, like the magicians could copy that. This is putting a stick out, and everything, all the water that's sitting around or in the rivers, in the lakes, in the ponds, in the streams, turns to blood. Okay? The Nile River was the life. That represented life to Egypt. Now it turns to blood, and everything dies. The fish die. You get this horrible stink. What could it have been? Well, it could be blood. It could be, here in the Houston area, we've dealt in past years with the red tide, the algae bloom of red algae that may come in. So it could be a red tide. Could just be some red sediment from Ethiopia upstream down the Nile. But you also have the wooden buckets and the stone jars. You have streams and lakes that are not fed by the Nile that are impacted. Could it have been red tide or red sediment or something? Yes, but God had to put it there. God had to make it happen for all of those things to be affected like that. Okay? So how did Pharaoh respond to this? Verse 23. Verse 22 we've already read, and that is that the magicians could duplicate the water to blood thing. And verse 23, instead, 22 it says, Pharaoh's heart became hard. Instead, he turned, went into his palace, and he didn't even take this into heart. Okay? Goes on, all the Egyptians dug along the Nile to get drinking water because they couldn't drink the water of the rivers. They had to get water that had been filtered by the sand by digging little wells. So he ignored it. Pharaoh ignored this. He didn't take it to heart, didn't believe it was anything more than just a magic trick. Okay? He didn't understand the magic behind these things, but he didn't need to because he saw that his magicians could do the same thing, and they did, so he didn't think much of what Moses did there. Okay, second plague. Chapter 8, verse 2 to 3. Okay, verse 1, Yahweh says to Moses, go to Pharaoh and tell him, let my people go so they can worship me. If you refuse to let them go, I will plague your whole country with frogs. The Nile will teem with frogs. They'll come up into your palace and your bedroom and onto your bed, into the houses of your officials and onto your people, into your ovens and kneading troughs. The frogs will go up on you and your people and all your officials. So Aaron stretched out his hand over the waters of Egypt, and the frogs came up and covered the land. Okay? So the second one is frogs. Okay? Where did these frogs come from? Well, you could say, all the fish are dead, so the little tadpoles and the fish eggs that are in the water are not being eaten by the fish, so there's an extra huge crop of frogs. Okay? Or maybe the frogs that were normally in the Nile couldn't stay there anymore because it was polluted, so they all left. And so all the frogs came out of the water and went up into the dry land and around people's houses, and there were just frogs everywhere. Whatever happened, God made it happen. Okay? How did Pharaoh respond to this? Well, we've already seen in verse 7 that the magicians did the same thing. They were able to replicate this. So verse 8. Pharaoh summoned Moses and Aaron, said, look, pray to Yahweh for me to get these frogs out of here, and take these frogs away from me and my people. If you do that, I'll let you and your people go offer sacrifices to Yahweh. Okay? So, even though he didn't see anything more than magic in these frogs, he didn't like the frogs there. They were in the way, they were too much trouble, and so he said, Moses, okay, you got me. go ahead, pray to Yahweh, tell him to get rid of these frogs, and then I'll let y'all go worship your God. Okay? So what happens? Well, Moses says in these verses here, I'll let you, you tell me when you want that to happen so that you realize this is the work of God and not just something that's happening by coincidence. You tell me when you want those frogs to be gone. And Pharaoh says, tomorrow. Moses says, okay. And so after Moses and Aaron left Pharaoh, verse 12, Moses cried out to Yahweh about the frogs he had brought on Pharaoh. And Yahweh did what Moses asked. The frogs died in the houses, in the courtyards, in the fields. They were piled into heaps, and the land reeked of them. Okay, so just what Pharaoh asked for happened. And now Egypt stinks because of all these dead frogs. But when Pharaoh saw that there was relief, no more frogs, he hardened his heart and would not listen to Moses and Aaron, just as Yahweh had said. So even though he said that he would let them go, he takes back his word. Because, hey, the frogs are gone. Problem's over. Okay? So, God sends a third plague. What's the third plague? Verse 17. They did this. Aaron stretched out his hand with the staff and struck the dust of the ground. Gnats came upon men and animals. All the dust throughout the land of Egypt became like gnats. Okay? Or it was like all the dust. So the next plague, the third plague, was gnats. Okay? Where did the gnats come from? And it could also be, the word there could also be mosquitoes. Okay? So where'd they come from? Well, again, the fish are dead. They're not eating the gnat eggs or the mosquito eggs, the mosquito larvae. That could be part of it. So we have gnats. How does Pharaoh respond? And here we've already seen that the magicians could not reproduce this. In verse 19, the magicians say to Pharaoh, "This is the finger of God." But Pharaoh's heart was hard, and he wouldn't listen, just as Yahweh had said. Okay, all of this is confirming what God had said already. Fourth plague. There's another one. Okay, verse 24. Dense swarms of flies poured into Pharaoh's palace and into the houses of his officials, and throughout Egypt the land was ruined by the flies. So there were flies everywhere, in the houses, in the fields, everywhere you went there were swarms and swarms of flies. Where did the flies come from? Well, this one here I think is pretty clear, or pretty obvious. You got these piles of dead frogs that are stinking to high heaven. What, when something stinks like that, when you have dead animals, what often happens? Well, flies lay their eggs in those dead animals, and the maggots eat it, and they grow into flies, and so you're getting all these flies from these frogs. Okay, but all of them happened at the same time, so God's hand was in this as well, and it was throughout all of Egypt, it says here. But okay, you say, well, this is pretty clean, that this is just natural. This wasn't God's hand. Well, God did play a hand here. Verses 22 and 23. But on that day, I'll deal differently with the land of Goshen, where my people live. No swarms of flies will be there, so that you will know that I, Yahweh, am in this land. I will make a distinction between my people and your people. This miraculous sign will occur tomorrow. Okay, so the day before the flies show up, Moses tells Pharaoh, okay, Yahweh's going to send tons of flies. And you know what? Just so that you'll know, number one, I'm telling you it's going to happen tomorrow, and you'll see that timing, and so that's God's hand at work. But just so that you know that God is doing this, and it's not just because of these frog piles, there's going to be flies everywhere in Egypt except for Goshen, except for where God's people are. Okay? And sure enough, that's what happens. How does Pharaoh respond? Verse 28, Pharaoh said, I'll let you go offer sacrifices to Yahweh, your God, in the desert, but you can't go very far. Okay, now pray for me. Okay, so again, he said, okay, get rid of the flies, pray for me, and then I'll let you go. So Moses prays, leaves Pharaoh and prays, verse 30, to Yahweh, and Yahweh did what Moses asked. The flies left Pharaoh and his officials and his people. Not a fly remained. Okay, better than off. But this time also, Pharaoh hardened his heart and would not let the people go. Even though he had said he would, he reneges again and comes back on his word and will not let the people go. Okay? Fifth plague. So God sends another plague. Plague 5, verse 6, chapter 9. The next day, Yahweh did it. All the livestock of the Egyptians died. A lot of livestock. And they died. But not one animal belonging to the Israelites died. Okay? So the next plague is a disease that killed all the livestock of Egypt that were down the fields, except Goshen. Not a single animal in all of Goshen died. But all throughout Egypt, all the other animals did. So again, you see God's hand at this. How could God have used nature in this? Well, you've got heaps of frogs. You've got dead flies all over. You've had gnats and flies and all of that. You've got disease that could be from those dead piles that are carried by the mosquitoes or by the flies. So God could be using all that together as well. But you know, another point of this is, with all the animals dying, Egypt had a lot of animal gods, okay, or gods with animal heads. And here, this god of the Israelites is killing all the animals in Egypt. So you see the power of Israel's God being more powerful than the gods of Egypt. How does Pharaoh respond to this? Verse 7, Pharaoh sent men to investigate and found that not even one of the animals of the Israelites had died. But yet his heart was unyielding and he would not let the people go. Okay? So despite losing all his livestock, not just cows, but camels and donkeys and sheep and goats, all of that, we see that in verse 2, or verse 3, chapter 9. Realizing and getting confirmation that none of the animals died in Goshen, this is obviously the hand of God. But Pharaoh's getting pretty bold here. He doesn't want to take a step back, and he will not let these people go. Plague 6, verse 10. So they took soot from a furnace and stood before Pharaoh. Moses tossed it into the air, and festering boils broke out on men and animals. Okay? So there are these boils. Again, this could be have something to do with the disease from frogs and fly piles and stuff, but people were covered with disease, okay, with boils. This here we even saw in verse 11, we've already read that the magicians had boils all over them. Okay? How does Pharaoh respond to this? Verse 12. But Yahweh hardened Pharaoh's heart, and he would not listen to Moses and Aaron, just as Yahweh had said to Moses. So his heart was hard, he wouldn't listen. Now, it says here that God hardened Pharaoh's heart. So far, we've been seeing over and over again that Pharaoh hardened his own heart, but now we see God hardening Pharaoh's heart. Why would it say that? Why would God even think of that or do that? Verses 15 to 16. Okay, this is God speaking to Moses. Now let me just start at verse 13. Okay, Yahweh tells Moses, get up early in the morning, confront Pharaoh and say to him, this is what Yahweh, the God of the Hebrews, says, let my people go so they may worship me. Or this time, I will send the full force of my plagues against you and against your officials and your people so that you may know that there is no one like me in all the earth. For by now I could have stretched out my hand and struck you and your people with a plague that would have wiped you off the earth. But, Pharaoh, I've raised you up for this very purpose, that I might show you my power and that my name might be proclaimed in all the earth. Okay? You still set yourself against my people and will not let them go. Therefore, at this time, and it goes on to the next plague. So, God raised up this Pharaoh and made him the hard-hearted man that he is so that God could reveal himself through these plagues. But you saw the next verse there. You know, God's pointing his finger at Pharaoh. Pharaoh had the choice, okay? It's not like when it says the Lord hardened Pharaoh's heart. It's not saying that Pharaoh didn't have a choice. God made him say no. No, Pharaoh had a role to play in this, and he was guilty of this. God did not unharden Pharaoh's heart. We can put it that way. God allowed Pharaoh to harden his own heart and to stand up against the Egyptians or against the Israelites. You see, God even says, you know, it would have been so easy just to wipe y'all out real quick and take my people, but that's not what this is about. Okay? Sure, I want you to let my people go, and I want to take my people to the promise, the land that I promised, but I also want to show them and you who I am. And that's what this is all about. All right, seventh plague, 25. Throughout Egypt, hail struck everything in the fields, both men and animals. It beat down everything growing in the fields and stripped every tree. So you had this hail coming down. A hailstorm with thunder and lightning and rain, nothing like you've ever seen before, it says here. It's the worst storm at the end of verse 24. It's the worst storm in all the land of Egypt since it had become a nation. Okay? And hail just wiped out everything. It talks about the crops in verse 31. The flax and the barley were destroyed since the barley had headed and the flax was in bloom. So that kind of tells us about the time of year in the late winter, early spring, because it also says that the wheat and spelt, however, were not destroyed because they ripen later. That kind of gives us a time frame of when this was. So we have this great, great hailstorm. One other twist, verse 26. The only place it did not hail was the land of Goshen where the Israelites were. Okay? So you see God's hand. Now, we can't say that this happened as a result of the river of blood or the frog heaps or flies or mosquitoes or diseases or whatever. This is a whole new plague. On top of everything that's been happening over the last few weeks or months, however long this has taken place, God sends this huge hailstorm, and it wipes out their crops, wipes out their food. Okay, now they're still going to have wheat, that's still coming, but the flax and the barley were very important, and that wiped those things out, and it showed God's power. And you know what? That happened after Moses said it would happen. It says, verse 18. Therefore, at this time tomorrow, I will send the worst hailstorm that's ever fallen on Egypt from the day it was founded until now. Now, they didn't have the Weather Channel back then. They couldn't see a storm coming. A whole 24 hours ahead of time, they had no idea that there was going to be this kind of a storm. When you have a hailstorm, it's a sudden front kind of thing that happens. So, how could this happen? And how could Moses know about it a day in advance if it were not for the hand of God? So how does Pharaoh respond to this? 27:28. Then Pharaoh summoned Moses and Aaron. This time I've sinned, he said. Yahweh's in the right. I and my people are in the wrong. So pray to Yahweh. We've had enough thunder and hail. I'll let you go. You don't have to stay any longer. Okay? So he said, here he repents. He says, I'm sorry. I've been wrong. You're right. This obviously is the hand of God. Tell him to stop. I'll let you go. Okay? So, what happens? 34, 35. When Pharaoh saw that the rain and hail and thunder had stopped, he sinned again. He and his officials hardened their hearts. So Pharaoh's heart was hard, and he would not let the Israelites go, just as Yahweh had said through Moses. Okay? So he hardened his heart, wouldn't let the people go. Okay? Why was Pharaoh's heart continually hardened? Again, we've kind of talked about this, but the beginning of chapter 10, then Yahweh said to Moses, go to Pharaoh, because I've hardened his heart and the hearts of his officials so that I may perform these miraculous signs of mine among them. So that you can tell your children and your grandchildren how I dealt harshly with the Egyptians and how I performed my signs among them, and that you may know that I am Yahweh. So what's happening here is so impossible to happen by nature. It's obviously only by the power of God that these stories would last forever. And guess what? How many thousands of years are we talking about them now? And these are stories that we can tell our children and grandchildren to remind them and show them the great power of God, that God is in control of everything. And so we see God's hand at work through these plagues. And by allowing Pharaoh and his officials' hearts to remain hard, that gave opportunity for God to be revealed more and more. All right, seventh plague was hail. Eighth plague, chapter 10, verses 13 to 15. Moses stretched out his hand over Egypt, his staff over Egypt, and Yahweh made an east wind blow across the land all that day and all that night. Now, an east wind would come from the east, which would be, what's in the east of Egypt? Not much, just a bunch of desert, just a bunch of hot, dry desert. So God made this east wind blow. By morning, the wind had brought the locusts. Okay, let's see. It blew across the land all that day, all that night. By morning, the wind brought all the locusts. They invaded all of Egypt and settled down in every area of the country in great numbers. Never before had there been such a plague of locusts, nor will there ever be again. They covered all the ground until it was black. They devoured all that was left after the hail, everything growing in the fields and even the fruit on the trees. Nothing green remained on tree or plant in all the land of Egypt. So that wheat and spelt that had been spared from the hail, it's gone now. The locusts ate it. Okay, the locusts ate everything green in Egypt. How did Pharaoh respond when he was warned that this plague was coming? Let's back up to verse 7. Pharaoh's official said to him, "How long is this man going to be a snare to us? Let the people go so that they can worship Yahweh their God. Don't you realize that Egypt is ruined?" And then Moses and Aaron were brought back to Pharaoh. "Go, worship Yahweh your God," he said. "But just who will be going?" Moses answered, "We'll go with our young and our old, with our sons and our daughters and our flocks and our herds, because we're to celebrate a festival to Yahweh." Pharaoh said, "Yahweh be with you. If I let you go along with your women and children, clearly you're bent on evil. No, have only the men go and worship Yahweh, since that's what you've been asking for." Then Moses and Aaron were driven out of Pharaoh's presence. Okay? So, when he was warned of this coming plague of locusts, which we skipped those verses 3 through 6, he says, okay, you got me. You can go. Who's going? No, you're not taking everybody. Just the men. Okay, all this time I've been thinking that's what you were asking for. I'll let the men go. But you got to leave the women and children here. That way I know that you'll come back. Okay? That way I can hold them as hostage. If y'all are going out into the desert to try to build a force and maybe meet up with Hittites or whateverites are out there to come and attack us, we'll have your women and children here to protect us. Okay? So that's, you can see that's what Pharaoh is thinking here. And so he had refused. Now the locusts come, and what happens? Well, sounds very familiar. Verse 18, Moses then left Pharaoh and prayed to the Lord, because we see in verse 16, you know, Pharaoh said, "I've sinned against Yahweh your God and against you, and I'll forgive my sin once more. Pray to Yahweh your God to take this deadly plague away from me." Moses left and prayed to Yahweh. And Yahweh changed the wind to a very strong west wind, which caught up the locusts and carried them into the Red Sea. Not a locust was left anywhere in Egypt. But Yahweh hardened Pharaoh's heart, and he would not let the Israelites go. Okay? So again, you have Pharaoh's heart being hard. Well, we're getting close. Got two more. Ninth plague. Okay? Verse 22. Moses stretched out his hand toward the sky, and total darkness covered all Egypt for 3 days. No one could see anyone else, it was that dark, or leave his place for 3 days. Yet all the Israelites had light in the places where they lived. Okay? So you have 3 days of darkness, complete darkness everywhere in Egypt except for the land of Goshen where the Israelites lived. Okay? Was it a big dust storm? Was it, you know, it couldn't be an eclipse for 3 days. Whatever. God turned out the lights for 3 days everywhere except for Goshen. Goshen still had light because the Egyptians, or the Israelites, were there. What's interesting, one of the chief gods of the Egyptians was Ra, who was a sun god. again, we see the power of Yahweh being much greater than that of the power of the great gods of the Egyptians. How does Pharaoh respond to this? Verse 24. Pharaoh summoned Moses and said, "Go, worship Yahweh. Even your women and children may go with you. Just leave your flocks and herds behind." Okay? That way we have collateral here. Okay? So he's still trying to put conditions on this. Going on, Moses said, "You've got to allow us to have sacrifices and burnt offerings to present to Yahweh our God. Our livestock too must go with us. Not a hoof is to be left behind. We have to use some of them in worshiping Yahweh our God, and until we get there, we won't know what we're to use to worship Yahweh." But Yahweh hardened Pharaoh's heart, and he was not willing to let them go. Pharaoh said to Moses, "Get out of my sight. Make sure you do not appear before me again." That's it. I don't want to see you again. Every time you come, you bring another plague. "The day you see my face, you will die." "Just as you say," Moses replied, "I will never appear before you again." Okay? So Moses never sees Pharaoh again. We've now had the three plagues, or the nine plagues, 3 days of darkness here in the ninth plague. How many more plagues are there? Chapter 11. Now Yahweh had said to Moses already, okay, before this, "I will bring one more plague on Pharaoh and on Egypt. After that, he will let you go from here, and when he does, he will drive you out completely." Okay? No longer is this just going to be for y'all to go out in the desert and worship me, but Pharaoh is going to drive you out completely. He's going to be totally finished with you. Okay? So that's where we see this turn from going out to worship to being a complete exodus and a complete departure. So, what was this tenth plague? Well, Zoom chapter 12, verse 29 to 30. "At midnight, Yahweh struck down the firstborn in Egypt, from the firstborn of Pharaoh who sat on the throne, to the firstborn of the prisoner who was in the dungeon, and the firstborn of all the livestock as well. Pharaoh and all his officials and all the Egyptians got up during the night, and there was loud wailing in Egypt, for there was not a house without someone dead." So we have the firstborn sons of all killed. Okay, firstborn of every Egyptian house, from the Pharaoh to the slaves, not the Israelite slaves. Why not? How were the Israelites spared from this plague? Well, back up a few verses, 21 to 23. "Moses summoned all the elders of Israel and said to them, 'Go at once and select the animals for your families and slaughter the Passover lamb.'" Okay? "Take a bunch of hyssop," which is kind of a reed with a bunch of stuff on it, "but dip it in the blood in the basin and put some of the blood on the top and on both sides of the door frame. Not one of you shall go out of the door of his house until morning. When Yahweh goes through the land to strike down the Egyptians, he'll see the blood on the top and the sides of the door frame, and he'll pass over that doorway. He will not permit the destroyer to enter your houses and strike you down." Okay? So God had prescribed this action. In other words, if you belong to me, if you are one of my people, then do this. Sacrifice this lamb. Okay, and there's verses that talk about that. Take the blood of that lamb, put it on the top of your door and on the sides of your door, and that way your house will be spared, and this plague will not attack your house. So what would have happened to Israelites who didn't do that? Well, they would have rejected God's command, and they probably would have been caught up into it. This was the sign of the Passover, sign where the angel of death would pass over that house and spare that house. Okay? So this blood of the Passover lamb is what saved them. Well, how are we spared from the eternal death that we deserve? John 1, verse 29. "The next day, John saw Jesus coming toward him and said, 'Look, the Lamb of God who takes away the sin of the world.'" So how are we spared from the eternal death that we deserve? The blood of the Lamb, the blood of the Passover Lamb. In Revelation, Jesus has talked, the Lamb of God is called the Paschal Lamb or the Passover Lamb. That's the ceremony that you celebrate chapter 12, verses 24 to 27 talk about it, and it's talked about multiple other places too. Obey these instructions as a lasting ordinance for you and your descendants. When you enter the land that Yahweh will give you as He promised, observe this ceremony. And when your children ask you, what does this ceremony mean to you? Well, then tell them, it's the Passover sacrifice to Yahweh who passed over the houses of the Israelites in Egypt and spared our homes when He struck down the Egyptians. Then the people bowed down and worshiped. Okay? So that's they were called to partake of this feast. And earlier on in chapter 12, you can see some of the prescriptions of that feast. It involves bitter herbs that remind them of the slavery, and flat bread or unleavened bread baked without yeast because they had to leave quickly and didn't have time for the bread to rise, all that. So this festival reminded them that that God had saved them from this. Okay, so they celebrate that Passover every year to remember how God saved them from the death that came through Egypt. What ceremony reminds us of the saving that we had and how God sets us free like He set the Israelites free? Matthew 26, starting verse 26. When they were eating, Jesus took bread, gave thanks, and broke it, and gave it to His disciples, saying, "Take and eat. This is My body." Then He took the cup, gave thanks, and offered it to them, saying, "Drink from it, all of you. This is My blood of the covenant, which is poured out for many for the forgiveness of sins. I tell you, I will not drink of this fruit of the vine from now on until that day when I drink it anew with you in My Father's kingdom." Okay? So the Lord's Supper is our Passover feast. And we every time we celebrate it, we remember that God set us free through the blood of the Lamb, free from the death that we deserve, free from the slavery to sin. Okay, to go to His promised land, just as with the Israelites. Okay, so the tenth plague is this death of the firstborn. How does Pharaoh respond to the tenth plague? Chapter 12, verses 31 and 32. During the night, Pharaoh summoned Moses and Aaron and said, "Up." Now it says summon Moses and Aaron. Some say that that means Moses then came and saw Pharaoh again. I think that maybe not. Word got to Moses. He sent word to Moses, maybe another way to say this. But he says, "Up, leave My people, you and the Israelites. Go worship Yahweh as you have requested. Take your flocks, your herds, as you said, take it all, take your people. Go, and also bless Me." Okay? The longer you stay in this country, the worse things get out of here. Go. Leave. Whatever it takes. You're gone. Okay? So He told Israel to leave. Now, we see that they had to leave quickly. He wanted them out of there quickly. The Israelites wanted to leave quickly before Pharaoh changed his mind. We see that the Egyptians wanted them to leave quickly. And they helped them get packed and get gone, and gave them riches, gave them carts and whatever they had to help these people leave. Why? Verse 33. The Egyptians urged the people to hurry and leave the country. For otherwise, they said, we'll hold die. So the people took their dough before the yeast was added, carried it on their shoulders in kneading troughs wrapped in clothing. The Israelites did as Moses instructed and asked the Egyptians for articles of silver and gold and for clothing. Yahweh had made the Egyptians favorably disposed towards the people, and they gave them what they asked for. So they plundered the Egyptians. Okay? So the Egyptians wanted to see these people gone. They probably would have liked to have seen them gone many plagues before. They weren't as patient, probably, as Pharaoh had been. And now when Pharaoh finally says go, they want to help them go. Because obviously, we're in opposition to their God here, and their God is pretty powerful, and their God is mad, and we got to make their God happy. So let's let these people go. Oh, you want My gold ring? Sure, you've got it. Go, take it. You want My clothes? You've got it. Okay. So they plundered the Egyptians because the Egyptians wanted to see them go and wanted to appease and make the Israelites' God happy and stop killing them and being so harsh on them. So how many people left? Going on. The Israelites journeyed from Ramses to Succoth. There were about 600,000 men on foot, besides women and children. Many other people went up with them, as well as large droves of livestock, both flocks and herds. So we see 600,000 men. That doesn't count the women and children. So you probably got a couple million Israelites there. Plus, it says others went with them as well. Okay? So you have 2, 3, 4 million, however many, lots and lots of people left. And if you remember, when they had come, there were 70 of them that were descendants of Jacob. So you see that they had become fruitful and multiplied greatly here. How long had that taken? How long had they spent in Egypt? Verse 41. At the end of the 430 years, to the very day, all of Yahweh's divisions left Egypt. So to the very day, from the day that Jacob and his sons and grandsons came into Egypt, 430 years later, to the very day, is when they left. So they leave. We see in some of these verses also that they take the bones of Joseph, because that was one of the requests that Joseph had made before he died. And so they go, and we see that they don't go. There's a main road that goes along the coastline of the Mediterranean Sea, goes up into the land of the Philistines, but that's not the way they go. Why not? Verse 17. When Pharaoh let the people go, God did not lead them on the road through the Philistine country, though that was shorter. For God said, if they face war, they might change their minds and return to Egypt. Okay, so God knew they weren't ready for war. They weren't, but not only were they not ready for war, but they weren't ready. They weren't ready to be a people. They weren't ready to be his people. They weren't ready to take the promised land or receive the promised land. There was no organization, no laws, no rules, no structures, no military, no unity, none of that. So, that's got to be taken care of. And that's the first priority. And that's where God takes him. That's going to be our subject next week. He takes him to this holy mountain, Mount Sinai, where same place where God had appeared to Moses in the burning bush. And God sets all that stuff in place. And we'll talk about that next week. Okay? Now, it says here that God didn't lead them on that road through the Philistine country. Well, how did God lead them? You know, that kind of implies that God did lead them somewhere else. How would God lead his people where to go? Verse 21, 22. By day, Yahweh went ahead of them in a pillar of cloud to guide them on their way, and by night, in a pillar of fire to give them light, so that they could travel by day or by night. Neither the pillar of cloud by day nor the pillar of fire by night left its place in front of the people. Okay? So this pillar that looked like a cloud during the daytime and like fire at nighttime was always there in front of them. And when that would pick up and move, then the people would pick up and move. And wherever it would go, they would follow. So that was God leading them. That was the presence of God to them. Okay? Now we see that they go and they, you know, they went to Succoth, and then they went on, and we see they kind of move around. Verse 20 of chapter 13, after leaving Succoth, they camp at Etham at the edge of the desert. And then in chapter 14, we see verse 2, tell the Israelites to turn back and encamp near Pi Hahiroth, between Migdol and the sea. They're to encamp by the sea directly opposite Bel Zephon. Okay, why did he have them go backwards? Because they kind of backtracked a little bit here to a degree. Pharaoh will think, the Israelites are wandering around the desert in confusion, hemmed in by the desert. And I'll harden Pharaoh's heart, and he will pursue them. But I will gain glory for myself through Pharaoh and all his army, and the Egyptians will know that I am Yahweh. So the Israelites did this. So he said, okay, you're obviously up against the desert here. Go back, and Pharaoh's scouts will report back to him that you're in confusion, that you don't know where to go because the desert is here and you're lost, and he'll come get you. And that will show my power once more to Pharaoh, to you, to the Egyptians, to the world. Okay? So, Pharaoh's back. His son has died. He mourns that. He's let all the people go. And then he comes out of shock. And what does he do after realizing that his slaves were actually gone? All these people, he no longer has people to make bricks. He no longer has people to do all this construction projects that he's got going on. Verse 8, chapter 14, Yahweh hardened the heart of Pharaoh, king of Egypt, so that he pursued the Israelites, who were marching out boldly. The Egyptians, all of Pharaoh's horses and chariots, horsemen and troops, pursued the Israelites and overtook them as they camped by the sea near Pi Hahiroth, opposite of Baal Zephon. Okay? So he took his army and he chased Israel. Went to go get them back or fight them, whatever it took here. Okay? Well, the Israelites here are parked next to the Red Sea. It says here in back in verse 2, they're encamped by the sea directly opposite of Baal Zephon. Well, they see the Israelites coming. They got the sea at their back. What do they think? Do they trust God when they're cornered by these Egyptians? Verse 11. They said to Moses, "Was it because there was no graves in Egypt that you brought us out here in the desert to die? Why have you done this to us by bringing us out of Egypt? Didn't we say to you in Egypt, 'Leave us alone, let us serve the Egyptians'? It would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than to die in the desert." How quickly they forget. What about all those plagues? What about all the great powers of God? Isn't it obvious to you that this is God, this isn't Moses? But the first sign of trouble, they turn on him. They forget all about God, they forget all about what's happening here, and they turn on Moses, and they say, "Oh, things were so much better in Egypt. Why didn't you leave us there and let us enjoy life in Egypt as slaves?" Okay? Well, they're cornered, but God's got a plan. How does God save his people? 21:22. Then Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and all that night Yahweh drove the sea back with a strong east wind and turned it into dry land. The waters were divided, and the Israelites went through the sea on dry ground with a wall of water on their right and on their left. Okay? So this is where you have the great Charlton Heston staff and the river, the Red Sea parts. Now, you may have heard, the real Hebrew word there is Yam Suf. Or Yam Suf. Yam is sea. Suf means reeds. It's Sea of Reeds. It was translated into English early on as Red Sea. But there's a lot of talk about this could be, there's a lake there and there's some waters there with reeds in them. And, you know, whatever it is, it's a big body of water. There was no way that they could get across without God's intervention. God intervened, parted the waters. They walked not on muddy ground, but on dry ground and went across. And as they went across, it would take time. We got millions of people to get across there. Okay, how did God hold back the Egyptians? Because the Egyptians are right there. 19-20. Then the angel of God, who had been traveling in front of Israel's army, withdrew and went behind them. The pillar of cloud also moved from in front and stood behind them, coming between the armies of Egypt and Israel. Throughout the night, the cloud brought darkness to one side and light to the other side, so that neither went near the other all night long. Okay? So God went between them. God held them back, put his cloud between and his angel between the Egyptian army and Israel. Okay? Then after Israel had crossed, the Egyptians pursued them. How does God slow that down? 23. The Egyptians pursued them, and all of Pharaoh's horses and chariots and horsemen followed them into the sea. During the last watch of the night, Yahweh looked down from the pillar of fire and cloud at the Egyptian army and threw it into confusion. He made the wheels of their chariots come off so that they had difficulty driving. And the Egyptians said, "Let's get away from the Israelites. Yahweh's fighting for them against Egypt. So it's not us against these men. We're fighting against God here. Let's leave. Let's get out of here." So they turn and they go back and try to get back out of this sea. Then Yahweh says to Moses, "Stretch out your hand over the sea so that the waters may flow back over the Egyptians and their chariots and horsemen." Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and at daybreak the sea went back to its place. The Egyptians were fleeing toward it, and Yahweh swept them into the sea. The water flowed back and covered the chariots and horsemen, the entire army of Pharaoh that had followed the Israelites into the sea. Not one of them survived. Okay, so God wiped out that group of the army there, closed the sea back and destroyed them. All right? So, has God shown his power? Has God answered the question that the Israelites had to Moses? Why did you bring us out to this desert? Is it because there's not enough graves? There's not enough places to bury our dead, to bury us in Egypt? You know, why'd you bring us out here to die? Well, you haven't been brought out here to die. You've been brought out here to be saved and see the mighty power of God. And what happened as a result? Verse 31. And when the Israelites saw the great power that Yahweh displayed against the Egyptians, the people feared Yahweh and put their trust in Him and in Moses, His servant. And we're going to see in a couple of weeks when we talk about the wanderings of the Israelites in the desert, that their experiences were there for this reason, to show them who is God, to show them that Yahweh is God, show them that Yahweh is in control, so that they will put their trust in Him. They've got some stuff ahead of them that there's no way that they can achieve on their own. They can't achieve it at all without the power of God. And so they need to put their trust in God. And that's what God wants of us anyway. He wants us to put our trust in Him. And that's what happened here. How do the Israelites respond to this? Chapter 15, you've got this great song of Moses and then a little song of Miriam. Moses and the Israelites sang this song to the Lord. I will sing to Yahweh, for He is highly exalted. The horse and his rider, He is hurled into the sea. The Lord is my strength and my song. He's become my salvation. He's my God. I will praise Him, my Father's God, and I will exalt Him. Yahweh's a warrior. Yahweh is His name. And it goes on and on. And there's this great song that they sing of praise to God for God's great power. And they worship Him. So now we see them where God wants them. In a worshipful state of mind, trusting, believing, fearing, having faith, and looking to God for His guidance and protection. Let's close with prayer. God, our Father, we thank You for the story that You've given us this morning of the way that You intervened in getting Pharaoh to let Your people go. That You could have done it any way You wanted to. You could have just brought them out of there. You could have just popped them over into the promised land, but instead You took this opportunity to reveal Yourself to them, to the Egyptians, to Pharaoh, to the world, to us, by seeing Your great power, to see that You have power over all the greatest powers known to mankind, because You've created them all. You've created us. We thank You for that. We thank You for the forgiveness that You give us when we are like Pharaoh, hard-hearted and so slow to believe and slow to see Your hand at work and to look to You. Like the Israelites who, whenever we encounter a trouble, we complain rather than putting our trust and our faith in You and looking to You for salvation and protection and guidance. Send Your Spirit among us into our lives so that we may know You better, we may follow You better, we may have Your strength to do Your work. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.